You can see there we're going to be in Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 through 20 today as we continue our journey through Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Last week we talked about what it means to be the salt of the earth. We talked about what it means and what it looks like to be the light of the world. And we tried to talk about and help us understand why it is so important that the presence of Jesus is actually visible in our lives through being the salt of the earth and the light of the world. The importance of making sure we don't lose our effectiveness, that we don't lose our witness. And that in addition to the importance of making sure that we keep our spiritual lamps trimmed and burning, because it could have an eternal impact on someone else's life. Today we move into an interesting and a challenging part of the scripture in all reality. And we need to understand what we talk about today, because the next few messages then are going to be Jesus' explanation about the Old Testament law in relation to New Testament living. So today we're kind of moving into a different section and a direction in Jesus' teaching. We're going to look at what I describe as the importance of how we make Jesus visible in our lives. How do we do that? How do we make sure we're fulfilling our responsibilities of being the salt of the earth and the light of the world? Well, let's read, begin with verse 17 of Matthew chapter 5. Jesus is speaking still, and he says this: "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish these things, but to fulfill them. And I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke of a letter will pass from the law until everything takes place. So anyone who breaks one of the least of these commands and teaches others to do so will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever obeys them and teaches others to do so will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness goes beyond that of the experts in the law and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." God, this is your word, and I pray that you would bless it and use it. Would you speak it and explain it to us today in Jesus' name? Amen. And we get to the fun part today, right? Jesus is talking to us about the law. Now, when we hear the word law, we can think about a lot of different things, right? We think about the laws of our country or our town or our state, whatever they might be. But Jesus is talking to us here about the scriptural law. And he assures us that he did not come to abolish the law, but that he came to fulfill the law, or to make sure that it accomplishes the purpose that it's designed to accomplish. He tells us that not even the smallest mark or the letter of the law will disappear until its purpose is achieved. So I want us to look at what Jesus is saying to us and see if we can get some kind of clarity and understanding on what he means by all of this. Now, when he says law, when he talks about the law, and when he refers to the law, what is he talking about? Well, in order to kind of get a little better picture of that, we need to understand how the Jews interpreted or talked about the law. And there were four ways. There were four different ways that the Jews referred. Now, we're not going to go in depth, so don't worry. But they talked about and referred to the law in four different ways. The first one was this: when Jews talked about the law, sometimes they were talking about just the Ten Commandments themselves. Okay, that was one way the Jews referred to the law. Another way, the second way they would refer to the law, was they would be talking about the Pentateuch, or what we know as the first five books of the Bible, the Torah, or the book of Moses, the books of Moses. The third way that they would talk about the law, sometimes you would see them, and Jesus refers to it here, they would use the phrase the law and the prophets. So when they talked about the law in that way, if they used the phrase the law and the prophets, then they were talking about what we would understand to be basically the Old Testament or all of the scriptural writings up to that point as a whole. And the last way they used it in a way that refers to the oral or the scribal law. And actually, that was the most common. That was the most common way they referred to the law in Jesus' day. And it is this form of the law that both Jesus and the Apostle Paul strongly condemned. Now, we're going to look at that. So what we're talking about now, we're going to look at the law from the standpoint of the scribal or the oral law. So today we're going to kind of approach this from a comparison contrast type angle. And remember what we talked about just a minute ago. Our premise or question for today is this: how do we make the presence of Jesus visible in our lives? When people look at us, how do they know that we are a Christian or a follower of Jesus? Well, we have some groups of people who insist on following what we call the letter of the law. That's the first part of the thing I want to look at today. Let's look at the letter of the law. And remember, we're talking about the scribal law. So today I want to talk to you about, you saw it up there, I want to talk to you about the contrast between religion and righteousness. Religion and righteousness. So when we talk about the letter of the law, now I want us to look at this from the religious aspect. These would be the people who insist on following every little detail of every rule, right? Okay, who knows someone that is the personality type that has to follow every little detail of every rule and regulation? You know somebody that's like, yeah, we know them, right? We just had this conversation. Emily was home this week while we were gone to retreat to stay with Lexi and help take care of the dogs and stuff. And she was telling us a little bit about her trip out here and how she got caught kind of in a... The GPS took her in a little different way, and she kind of got caught at this light where you had to come around through one light and then make a left-hand turn real quick to get out of the way of traffic and stuff. And those lights weren't synchronized. So she made one turn, but when she got to the turn where she was supposed to turn left, it was red, and she couldn't get out of the way. So the car in front of her turned left on a red light. When anybody comes, she goes, well, I thought so. I just did the same thing. She said, I didn't really want to, but I didn't want to get smoked either, right? So our daughter Emily, as you're telling us this story, she goes, I felt so bad because I turned left. That light was red, and I know it was illegal, and I wasn't supposed to do that. So maybe I'll get a ticket in the mail, maybe I won't. But she just, and if you know Emily at all, this story took like a long time to tell, okay? Because she broke a rule and she was all worried about it. So we have those people who think and believe that they need to follow every little detail of every rule and regulation. These are the people we know in the religious world as legalists, also known as Pharisees, as Jesus knew them. Remember a few weeks ago when I mentioned those four H's: hair, hose, hemlines, and television? Those are the legalists. And we can laugh about that, we can joke about it, but in some ways it's not really a joke, because there are those who believe that the only way Jesus can be seen and visible in our lives is by following every letter of the law. Do I dress the way I'm supposed to dress? Do I cut my hair the way I'm supposed to cut it? Do I not cut my hair at all? Do I wear a wedding ring? Do I not wear a wedding ring? You can think, man, what are you talking about? I'm telling you, there are people who still believe that's how they have to live in order for Jesus to be visible in their lives. Now, let's look at just one example of this, okay? Let's look at one example of the letter of the law people. I told you we're talking about the scribal law. Now, who were the scribes? The scribes were the legal experts, basically, that would take the basic Ten Commandments, those 10 basic guidelines and commandments that we have, and then they made it their life's work to sit there and come up with every little rule and regulation and explanation about what the 10 commandments should and shouldn't mean. Because their belief was, if the law doesn't say it explicitly, it somewhere says it implicitly, and we need to make sure everybody understands every little rule that could possibly be hidden somewhere in the text of the Ten Commandments. Well, here's one of the things that the law tells us, right? Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. No work was to be done on the Sabbath day. Well, that's a great idea, but the letter of the law people needed more information. So, instead of typing this all out, I just copied a couple pages from one of my favorite guys, William Barclay. I just copied, so I'm going to read this directly from him. The law tells us that there was to be no work done on the Sabbath day. So, here we go, and I start my, I'm reading from Barclay. He says this, all kinds of things were classified as work. For instance, to carry a burden on the Sabbath day is to work. But next, a burden has to be defined. So the scribal law lays it down that a burden includes food equal in weight to a dried fig, enough wine for mixing in a goblet, milk enough for one swallow, honey enough to put up on a wound, oil enough to anoint a small member, water enough to moisten an eye salve, paper enough to write a custom house notice upon, ink enough to write two letters of the alphabet, reed enough to make a pen, and so on endlessly. So they spent endless hours arguing whether a lamp could or could not be lifted from one place to another on the Sabbath, whether a tailor committed a sin if he went out with a needle in his robe, whether a woman might wear a brooch or false hair, even if it was permissible to go out on the Sabbath with false teeth or an artificial limb. It's in here. I'm reading it word for word. Or if a parent might lift a child on the Sabbath day, these things to them were the essence of religion. Their religion was a legalism of petty rules and regulations. So what does it mean to write something? Well, here's what it meant to write. To write was to work on the Sabbath. So the definition of writing runs like this. He who writes two letters of the alphabet with his right or with his left hand, whether of one kind or of two kinds, if they are written with different inks or in different languages, is guilty of work. Even if he should write two letters from forgetfulness, he's still guilty, whether he has written them with ink or with paint, red chalk, vitriol, or anything that makes a permanent mark. Also, he that writes on two walls that form an angle or on two tablets of his account book so that they can be read together is guilty. But if anyone writes with dark fluid, with fruit juice, or in the dust of the road, or in the sand, or in anything which does not make a permanent mark, they're not guilty. If he writes one letter on the ground and one on the wall of the house or on two pages of a book so that they cannot be read together, he's not guilty. That is a typical passage from the scribal law, and that is what Orthodox Jews regarded as true religion and true service to God. So to heal on the Sabbath was considered work. Obviously, this has to be defined. Healing was allowed when there was danger to the life, especially in troubles with the ear, nose, and throat. But even then, steps could be taken only to keep the patient from getting worse. No steps might be taken to make the patient get any better. So a plain bandage might be put on a wound, but no ointment. Plain wadding might be put into a sore ear, but not medicated wadding. Letter of the law people. Now, how many of you want to live a life like that? This describes the letter of the law people. Now, we can laugh about it, but in all reality, we still have elements of this in some corners of religion, even today. Now, let me make something very clear. I don't fault or criticize anyone who feels personally convicted to follow a strict set of guidelines. Okay, I don't. I have people back where I grew up who still live that way because they feel like that's how they need to live in order for their witness and for their relationship with Christ to be intact. I don't have a problem with that. And I'm not here to criticize or make fun of them. But we can become so rigid that we project those expectations onto other people. And that, my friends, is where we cross the line into legalism. And judging people according to our standards of how they're supposed to live in order to be a Christian. And when we cross the line of legalism, it does not truly reflect the heart of Christ. So we have the letter of the law. So what's the contrast to that? Then we look at the spirit of the law. When Jesus said he came to fulfill the law, it meant that he came to bring out the real meaning of the law. Now listen, Jesus was obviously not a letter of the law kind of person, right? Oh, he knew it. He knew the law better than anybody. But he wasn't a letter of the law kind of person. How do I know that? Because he constantly broke ceremonial laws when he did things like healing on the Sabbath. Or not observing the proper way to wash his hands before they went and ate a meal. I mean, when we think about it, Jesus was condemned and he was crucified as a what? A criminal or a lawbreaker. That's how they saw Jesus. So Jesus wasn't about following every letter of the ceremonial law. And what he came to do was to help us understand the spirit or the essence of the law. So I want us to think about that for a minute. Here it is. The spirit or essence or the reason for the law was and still is to help us seek and find the will of God for our lives. And once we know the will of God, then we need to follow that and obey it. See, even the scribes and Pharisees understood this. They understood it was important to find the will of God, but they misunderstood how to go about it. They thought finding the will of God came through following all the rules and regulations of their own making. So let's think about the Ten Commandments. Yes, those Ten Commandments give us some specific guidelines, but don't go into every detail, right? When we look deeper, we see that those guidelines can be summed up in two words. The first word is this: reverence. Reverence. Reverence for God and the things of God. Now, what does reverence mean? It means to have profound respect and love. When you have a reverent attitude toward God, you honor him, you express your gratitude to him, you obey his commandments. You should be reverent in our behavior as well as in our attitudes. What does this have to do with the Ten Commandments? Because the first four commandments all have to do with our reverence or profound respect for God. They deal with the reverence for who God is. God said, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt." We need to have a deep reverence and respect simply for who God is. There is no other. And reverence means we recognize him as the only true God. And it goes on to say that we recognize and we have reverence for him by not having any other gods. You say, don't make for yourself another God. Don't set up your idols. Don't do any of this stuff. Don't worship anyone but me. That's reverence for God. We're supposed to have reverence for the name of God. The commandments tell us not to use the name of the Lord our God in vain or not to misuse his name in some way. Listen, God's name is not meant to be part of your curse word. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail here because but we're not supposed to use God's name in a way that is disrespectful or that reflects badly on him or his followers. We're supposed to have reverence for God's day or the Sabbath day. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. We just went through the whole letter of the law on that, right? What does that mean? I'm not going to get into a lot of detail here, even though because if I get into too much detail here, then I risk crossing that line into legalism, right? It just seems to me that in a lot of ways we've lost a sense of reverence in today's culture for God and for the things of God. Church has become optional for so many people and for so many reasons. I'll go to church as long as there's not something more entertaining or more fun that I want to do. Now, I'm not saying everything we do. See, you know what? My grandfather, my granddad Watson, Francis Watson, he's one of the people I'm named after. And I say this with all respect. He was one of the most godly people I've ever known. But to him, to remember the Sabbath day and to keep it holy meant he didn't read the newspaper on Sunday. He had a television in his house, but the TV didn't come on Sunday. You didn't go out to eat on Sunday. His grandchildren, man, we got the speech I don't know how many times when we were growing up, because I'm going to tell you something. We had Sunday morning church and we had Sunday evening church, but listen to me, when the weather was nice, you know what my cousins and my brothers and I were out doing on Sunday afternoon? We were out playing football or basketball, and we made sure that we got in time to get cleaned up and go back to church on Sunday night, but that didn't matter. His motto was Sunday was not meant to be a fun day. If we heard it once, we heard it 1,000 times. And in his mind, when we went out and did things like that on Sunday, we were not honoring the Sabbath day and keeping it holy. Now, once again, we're not here to talk about the letter of love, but I think we need to be careful, and I think we need to take into consideration some of the things that we do and some of the things that, you know, what makes Sunday any different for us than another day. So we need to sometimes, I think, we need to ask ourselves a question. Have we lost to some degree the true reverence for God in our lives? And I think we just need to be careful about that. The second word that the Ten Commandments can be summed up in is this. It's respect. The first four commandments deal with reverence for God. The last six commandments deal with respect for other people. They deal with how we treat other people. They talk about respecting our parents. They talk about respect for life. They talk about respect for property. They talk about respect for personality and respect for the truth and for another person's good name. They talk about respect for yourself so that wrong desires don't overcome us and get the best of us. Once again, William Barclay says it this way. These are the fundamental principles behind the Ten Commandments, the principle of reverence for God and respect for our neighbors and for ourselves. Without them, there can be no such thing as law. And on them, all the law is based. The spirit or the essence of the law is what Jesus came to fulfill. What does that mean? It means simply this. Jesus came to show us in real life what true reverence for God and respect for other people looks like. And what Jesus shows us is that reverence and respect don't consist of just following a bunch of man-made rules and regulations, but it means to show grace, it means to show mercy, it means to show forgiveness, and it means to show love in a way that glorifies and honors God. That's the spirit of the law. Now, a word of caution. Just as the letter of the law people can easily fall into legalism, then the spirit of the law people can easily fall into liberalism. What do I mean by that? There are those who want to avoid so profoundly the letter of the law that they've adopted a theology and a theory that anything goes. There is no law. There's a big word for that they teach us in Bible college and philosophy. It's called antinomianism. I mean, there's no law. There's no absolute. There's no rules or regulations. Just everything goes. It kind of refers to what we talked about a few weeks ago in Judges, where it says everyone did what they thought was right in their own eyes. So we have to be careful that we don't allow the pendulum to swing too far. Well, let's just use a phrase that we're all familiar with. Too far to the right or too far to the left. We got a midterm election coming up. We all know what those phrases mean, right? So let's deal with the balance here then. Where is the balance between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law? It's what I call love and the law. Love and the law. Jesus tells us here that unless our righteousness goes beyond that of the experts in the law and the Pharisees, we will never enter the kingdom of heaven. righteousness. Unless our righteousness, we've been talking about religion, now let's look at this next aspect of it that we talk about with righteousness. We just talked about the fact that reverence and respect means showing grace and mercy and forgiveness and love in a way that honors and glorifies God. And when I say love, let me just clarify something, okay? I'm not talking about this whole current woke, progressive, perverted kind of love that's infecting and polluting our culture and even a lot of our churches. I'm talking about a holy and pure love. This is where the idea of righteousness comes from. Our message today is called Religion versus Righteousness, and this is where the scribes and the Pharisees missed the boat. Jesus, even Jesus himself, commended and condemned the Pharisees. How do I, all in the same, in one of the same verses. He tells them, he says, "Woe to you, Pharisees, you clean the outside of the cup." I mean, in some ways he's commending them. Look, you look good from the outside. You make sure the outside of the cup is washed and clean and pure, but on the inside you're full of dead men's bones. They had a form of godliness, but were lacking the power. Why? Because they didn't have a relationship. Jesus was once asked what the greatest commandment was. We know his response, right? You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and a second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commands. Remember the Ten Commandments? Reverence and respect. If we love the Lord our God with all our heart and all our soul and all our mind, it means we have a holy love. And that holy love comes from a holy God, and it can only be experienced through a relationship with God. You see, righteousness is based on our relationship. To love God with all of our heart, all of our soul, and all of our mind means that we love everything about God. It means that we love his ways. It means that we love his teachings. It means that we love his word to the point where Psalm 119:11 says, "I've hidden your word in my heart that I might not sin against you." We even love his laws or his commands. See, if we truly love God with everything that is within us, then we love his law, because we know his law is designed to make us better people, not just to hold us under his thumb and make us do things we don't want to do. But it's made, its purpose is to make us more like him. Psalm 119, verses 97 and 98 says, "Oh, how I love your law. I meditate on it all day long. Your commands are always with me and make me wiser than my enemies." So we love all these things about God. And if we love all these things about God, it means we're not constantly trying to find a way around them. Only when we have this kind of love for God can we truly love our neighbors the way that God wants us to love them. Only this kind of love for and relationship with God can make us righteous. Listen, I can live as moral of a life as I choose to live. I can keep all the rules. I can be like the Pharisees. I can keep all the rules. Paul talked about that. He said, before I became a Christian, he said, you could not find one fault with me when it came to following the laws of the Pharisees. As for legalistic righteousness, I was faultless. But he had no relationship. Righteousness isn't about avoiding sin. Righteousness is about a relationship with God through Jesus Christ that helps us not to even really have a desire to sin. Because if we love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, and mind, our desire is to please him. Only this kind of love for God can make us righteous. This kind of righteousness, this is the kind of righteousness the world needs to see in us. It's the righteousness that comes from a relationship based on love for God. Gene Williams is a Nazarene pastor and church leader, and I have a book of sermon helps and outlines and stuff in my library. And when I was reading through some of his comments, here's what he said. If the righteousness of Christians in our world was more evident, people would be more interested in coming to know Jesus. If the righteousness of Christians in our world was more evident, then people would be more interested in coming to know Jesus. Not just following rules and regulations and standards and practices and the letter of the law. Once again, I'm fine with that if that's how people really feel like they need to live. But we also need to make sure that the love of Christ, that the relationship we have with Christ is shining through all that. And that we're not just trying to shape someone else into our mold of what we think a Christian should look like. So here's our question, here's our challenge. If we think about his comment, if the righteousness of Christians in our world was more evident, people would be more interested in coming to know Jesus. Here's the question. When people see us, what do they see? Do they see us following just a bunch of strict guidelines and rules and regulations and laws and expecting other people to do the same? Do they know us more for what we are against than who we are for? Or do they see us as people who love and revere God while still loving and respecting those around us? Jesus said he came not to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law. And when I wrote that sentence, a verse came back to me from teen Bible quizzing. From Romans chapter 13, verse 8. Jesus said he came not to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law. And Paul writes in Romans chapter 13, verse 8, that love is the fulfillment of law. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. Religion versus righteousness based on a relationship with Jesus Christ. I want to challenge and encourage us today and for this week. Let's determine that we're going to love God with everything we have in us and that we're going to love others with the love of Christ. Because if we can do that, we will be fulfilling the law just as Jesus did. And after all, that is why we're here, and that's what we're called to do as Christians. Will you bow your heads? Heavenly